Okay, it is 6 o'clock, and we are up to, I believe, Kuf Yud Amud Aleph. And we are going to start on the first wide line. Amarav Chizdek al-Achaylik al-Rabik al-Chaylik al-Ashkina. One who argues on his Rebbe is like arguing on the Rebbein Shlomim. Shunamar ba'atzaysam al-Hashem. They are heated up. Hatzaysam is machloikas. On Hashem. So Rashi, Chaylik al-Rabbi, Chaylik al-Yeshivasai, arguing on his established position. Now Rashi's trying to answer a question over here, and the question Rashi's trying to answer is that you are allowed to argue on your Rebbe in Halacha. There is no issa that says that if you disagree with your Rebbe in Halacha, you cannot disagree with him. Halacha is open, that anybody can figure out if he thinks Halacha is differently, and he does it in an honest, sincere fashion, he's allowed to argue. It's that you're not allowed to argue like Yeshivasa Sharavai. Not allowed to undermine your Rebbe's position as a Rebbe who teaches, and someone who's trying to undermine it, he's playing with the Rabbeinu Shlomim. As it says, Ashehitzu al Moshe v'Aaron b'daskarel b'tzayson al Hashem. They were arguing on the position of Moshe and Aaron. And yet, the Pasuk says, "Batzaisan al Hashem, ma'al aleihem akostim kilarecholkim klapi shchina." It's like they argued against Hashem. Now, you know, again, if it were me, I'll be honest, I have a problem with this Gemara. Because Kairach's arguing on Moshe was, is Moshe Rabbeinu the messenger of Hashem? So it was more than just arguing on Moshe Rabbeinu as the person Moshe Rabbeinu, but he was arguing on Moshe Rabbeinu's mission of being the messenger of Hashem, Kairach claiming that Hashem doesn't even believe it. So he is tampering with Hashem's Torah, so to speak. So I'm not on, if it were me, I would say I don't understand the proof from Kairach to everybody else. Everybody else who, I mean, it's not a good thing to do, but argues on his Rebbe, he's not tampering on the essence of the Torah, he's just tampering on his Rebbe. But Kairach was tampering with his Rebbe, who was claiming that he doesn't teach the right Torah. So I assume that Chaim the Gemara is trying to say that anybody that tampers with his Rebbe's yeshiva is also claiming that his Rebbe is not teaching the right Torah, and therefore is also playing around with Masaira, which is, that's why it's called Batzaisam al Hashem. In its smaller form, anyone who argues on his Rebbe's position is undermining the concept of Masaira Satira. And therefore, that why it would be considered Batzaisam al Hashem. That's how I understand the analogy, the comparison between Kairach and everybody else who argues are yeshivas or rabbis.
Rabbi, I thought you said that Kulam Kedoshim, so we're all equal.
Well, he's trying to say that that Moshe made Aaron Kohen Gadol in his own free choice, that Moshe decided the system that there could only be one Kohen Gadol. These are things that came straight from Hashem, right? So he's obviously questioning Moshe Rabbeinu's passing on of Torah, the Shechina Medaberes Mitoch Roinai. That's what he's questioning. You cannot separate. You can't say Moshe Rabbeinu did it on his own if you believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks from the throat of Moshe Rabbeinu.
But how about the other halachas that Moshe said?
From Hashem.
The regular halachas, he didn't argue.
Well, and the, according to the Midrash and the Gemara before, he argued in Talis Shkula
Chelus. Okay, that was more of a good idea.
Again, he did it, right? He came with his group, Lavshim Rashi brings it in Chumash. Again, all I'm trying to say is that the way I understand the analogy is to say that if you're undermining your Rebbe's position, not arguing in halacha, but undermining your Rebbe's position, in its own way is undermining the concept that Torah is handed down from generation to generation.
But just in general, I mean, if you can't say, is it Rabbo, or let's say you can't.
Says Rabbi, and my Gemara says Kulachayla Gal Rabbi.
No, what I'm trying to stress is, let's say you feel someone is not fit to be in his position, you're not allowed to argue with that?
A Rebbe? Your Rebbe? No.
A Rebbe.
Al Rabbi, it says. One who has a fight with his Rebbe, meaning he's not trying to undermine his position, but Rashi says, Tagor uktata lepatpet negra bedvarim. He speaks against his Rebbe. He's like arguing with the Shechina. Shana ma'heima me'mariva asherabu b'nei Yisrael es Hashem. right? They came to Taina Moshe Rabbeinu, right? And it's as if they're coming to Taina against Hashem. Amar Rabbi Chanina bar Papa called Misraim a Rabbi, one who's question. How does he translate Misraim?
Complains.
And how does he translate Mariva?
Picks a quarrel.
Picks a quarrel, and Misra means complains. Rashi seems to say that Meriva means speaks against his Rebbe. Misra means says his Rebbe is treating him unfairly. Rashi says, Misra, I'm a rabbi, Shanoi, le Mida Kvusha, or Mida Sakhzarius. He treats him with a Mida Kvusha. I think Kvusha means, I don't know what Kvusha means. I think Kvusha means, like he oppresses him, he squeezes him, and cruelly. You're not tining on us, you're tining on Hashem. One who Rashi learns says things against his Rebbe, not arguing with his Rebbe, but says things about his Rebbe. Kilu Maharaka Rashkina. And I did not translate Mahara the way I would translate it myself. Mahara means he questions in mind. He like says, you know, my Rebbe didn't do this right, or why is he doing this, or questioning in a critical way his Rebbe without trying to understand, but rather trying to criticize. But Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi seems to say that if he's just in his mind, the Gemara is not talking about. The Gemara is talking about he Mechapal of Dvarim spreads things about his Rebbe. So there seems to be four different categories here, and the Gemara is equating each of those categories as if one did it to Hashem. The first one being questioning his Rebbe's position, trying to undermine his Rebbe's position. The second one is fighting, looking to argue against his Rebbe, making a fight against his Rebbe, not questioning his position. I don't know exactly what he wants to achieve with the fight. Just argues with his Rebbe, not in learning, but in other things. The third one seems to say he complains about he's treated, and the fourth one seems to say spreads things about his Rebbe, says things about his Rebbe, like, you know, he does this wrong, and he does this wrong. Those are four different categories. Myself, again, I very hard to discern, to differentiate between the four, but the Gemara seems to have four different ways of expressing it. And each one is compared as if he's doing it to the Rabbi Nishmalim. What I think the Gemara is trying to say is that the Rebbe is the Messiah HaTaira. A person gets the Taira through his Rebbe, and therefore, Meir Rabbah Kamir Shemayim, since he is the conduit, he's the way that the Taira is being passed on, there has to be a relationship with the Rebbe that is, in a certain sense, similar to that of the Rabbi Nishmaelim, because he is the way you are getting the message of the Rabbi Nishmaelim. And undermining him in any way is really playing with his message. That's what I think it's trying to say.
So let's say Pastor Shalom.
See, again, you're pushing me here, but I'm myself not 100% sure how to differentiate between the four different categories. Yes.
What I'm saying is, like this. Let's say, it would never happen in Rebbe's class, but let's say a student feels his Rebbe is harsh on him. That's what the Pshat of Rashi says, you know?
Yeah.
So he has to take it and he can't. Are these things that really never happen, or you just can't argue? I don't get it. Are you allowed to go to the principal or whoever that would be and say, listen, I feel the Rebbe is a little bit tough on me. Can we talk about it? I've never happened in Rebbe's year. I'm saying hypothetical. Also true.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think we're talking here about a third grade Rebbe. We're talking about someone who was a master. And the master student relationship is one which requires an initial act by both. And once that is
no, I don't think we're talking about a third grade Rebbe either, but the question can be reworded. What happens if a person is in a yeshiva and he feels that he's getting treated in a cruel way by his Rebbe? Can he go and ask the Rebbe, why are you treating me that way? That I would think is 100% permissible. He's asking his Rebbe to clarify. Can he go around saying my Rebbe doesn't treat me fairly? Mara seems to say it's not a good thing to do. Again, either I'm not even sure if today those Rebbeim have the halacha of this Gemara either, because in halacha it's brought down to today our main Rebbe is Svarim. Our main Rebbe is written down. Doesn't have the concept of Rabbi Muvik doesn't exist today as much as it used to. Once upon a time, everything a person learned besides Tanakh came from a Rebbe. His whole Torah Shabbat came from a Rebbe. Today, most of the Torah Shabbat we learn from Svarim. The Rebbe is the one that teaches us how to master the Svarim, but most of the Torah Shabbat we do learn from Svarim. So there is concept of Rabbi, but it's not, I don't know if it's on the same. I'm not being mats or anything. I did not take this lahalacha. I don't know how it manifests itself lahalacha. I'm just saying that today the student Rebbe relationship is on a different level than it was in those days.
No wonder we're so fascinated. Because I've learned from a number of people. There are a vast number of people who are much more intelligent and erudite than I am. However, there's only one or two people who I would count as my Rebbe.
I understand. Again, back to the thing. I think most of the Torah everybody learns today comes from Sfarim.
That's unfortunate.
That's fact.
It's also unfortunate.
Again, I'm not posking anything here. I don't know how it manifests itself.
It's impossible to get the bracha from a book.
Again, Rebbe does not mean hadracha. It's part of it. Rebbe means where you learn your Torah Shabbat Peh. More people learn from art school than learn from any other Rebbe. That's a reality of the world. It's the theism of the world. I'm not talking about hadracha now. I would even venture to say that more people get their hadracha from a sefer like Rabbeinu Yaina or Mesillas Yesharim or Revolva Alei Shor than they do from a Rebbe too. So again, even in these areas of Ashkafa, a lot is based on the written word. It's a fact.
There are 10 people in the world today who understand Mesillas Yesharim and 20 who understand Revolva.
Again, I still think not good. I think we're beating a. Yes.
The way you explained the four questions or whatever they are, you made it sound like it's only for the sake of undermining. In other words, you're allowed to argue.
Yeah, I love
that. Argue even if you're not undermining it, if you're talking about a red move up here.
Well, if you are undermining by arguing, it's a reality. You can't separate the two. If you bring him down that you can argue in him, you're undermining his position of Rebbe.
And it's only talking about a Rebbe Mufa?
That's, again, I said in the beginning, I don't know how it manifests itself. I would say yes. It's only I'm totally speculating.
But
I don't.
I have to just add one thing. Is that I just want to say, on the estate,
yeah,
that if you can you go over, you can, of course you can go to a Rebbe and say, Rebbe, I take him to the side, say, Rebbe, let me just say, I really feel that we're just, that the situation is.
Again, I told you, you're not undermining him then, you're asking him to clarify.
It's all these things are just, well, we're just doing without speaking to him first.
Or even after you speak to him. Because he didn't clarify to your content doesn't mean he's wrong. That doesn't allow you to go. Again, we're talking about a Rebbe Mubik, we're not talking about a third grade Rebbe. Or eighth grade Rebbe.
It's
up to Gemara Vayishev. Okay, there we go. All the editorializing, we'll do a different time. Aisha Shamar Labala Brulerazai. Riches that is kept by its owner or watched by its owner and it does him harm. Amarish Lakish Aisha Shokairach. It was Kairach's riches that dug his grave, so to speak. It made him more powerful. He was not stoppable because of his riches. The Gemara says earlier in Sanhedrin that he supported a whole bunch of Talmidei Chachamim. He was more persuasive. His monetary riches gave him a position of influence, which is a reality in the world. Money talks. And therefore, his riches ended up misleading him, leading down a bad path, and made him less stoppable because he was so wealthy. That's called Yikum Asher Baragleim. It says all the thing the literal translation is kept them standing. It means all the wealth that they had by their feet, but I don't know what he translates the word Yikum. Wealth?
Stands him on his feet.
What does he say, Yikum?
Wealth.
Wealth. All the wealth that stands him on his feet. What stands a person on their feet is their money, meaning what makes them, quote unquote, stand upright and be able to tell other people what to do is the fact that they have money. Again, Kairach, the Gemara, the Medrash says there were two rich people in the world, Kairach from one Yid and one guy, and Kairach is the example given of the richest Yid that ever lived.
What's the
guy? It's a Medrash and Parshas Matas. Medrash Rabba Parshas Matas. Shnei Yibayrim Hayabaylam, Shnei Ashirim Hayabaylam, Shnei Chachamim Hayabaylam, they all got, all six of them didn't work out the way it was supposed to.
Throughout history or at the same time as Korach?
No, throughout history.
Bill Gates.
No, it's not the Gemara, the Medrash does not mention Bill Gates. It does mention Shnei Chachamim Hayah, but it's the Medrash in Parshas Matas. Al Yisrael Adam Chacham B'Chachmasai, Gibi B'Gvurasai, Asher B'Ashrai, Gimbezais Yisrael HaMetzal HaSkiv Yedai Yaisi. The Pasuk says, person should not praise himself with his wisdom, with his riches, with his strength. The Medrash there gives examples. There were two rich people by the world, two smart people in the world, two strong people in the world. They all got lost. The ones that make it are the ones that fear Hashem, not those who flaunt their wealth, wisdom, or riches, strength.
This is the more saying that everybody knew about Korach, the whole world knew about Korach.
I don't know what you mean.
Yesterday?
Who said that? I don't remember such a Gemara. I don't remember Gemara anything to do with the world.
The
Amar Ablevi. Matzah Gimel Meis Predus Lebanus Haimifenzo Shobes Nazim Shokairach. His keys to open up his treasure boxes filled up 300 white donkeys. Now the Mashal says 300 is a Lashon Guzma. All the Mefarshim always say that 300 is a number used in exaggeration, but it means a huge amount. And the reason they talk about white donkeys, Gemara says in Chulin that white donkeys, when they hit somebody, it never healed. Whatever bite they gave a person was not healable, never healed. According to one Gemara, it might even be fatal, but even according to another, it's not fatal, but it doesn't heal. So, the Midafka, he kept his treasure keys on white donkeys to deter people from borrowing it, so to speak. Because you didn't want to get around that white donkey. It was something like the, we always stay away from
pitbull.
The pitbull, right. It's something like the pitbull, right. Exactly. This was the old version of the pitbull, and if you keep the keys on a pitbull, people aren't going to borrow it so fast. The kulan klidi to kill for the gilda. Lest you think that this is metal, which is heavy, these were all the keys and locks were made out of leather. And therefore, it still needed to fill up who knows how many hundreds of donkeys. And again, Gimel Meis is a exaggeration, but it means a huge number of donkeys that reflect on his wealth. Rashi, Aklidi Miftachas and Akiz Bekulfis Menoilim the locks. Dr. Gemara Vait. Amar Rabbi Chama Rabbi Chanina Gimel Matmanias hit me Yosef in Mitzrayim. When Yosef sold the grain in Mitzrayim, he brought in a large amount of kesef v'zav. It says, "Vayilaki Yosef v'skala kesef v'skala zav." The pasuk talks about the fact that Yosef gathered tons of money to Mitzrayim. The world's treasures ended up in Mitzrayim. Yosef hid it in three different places. He had three hiding places where he hid the wealth of Mitzrayim. One was Fort Knox. I mean, something like three Fort Knoxes, basically. Achas nizgalsu l'kairach. One was revealed to Kairach. Kairach was zeicher to find it and took it along with him. Achas nizgalsu l'Antoninus ben Asurius. It was revealed to Antoninus ben Asurius. I don't know if this is the famous Antoninus or not. I don't know. But it was a Roman Empire emperor. The Achas genuzu l'tzadikim l'asid l'avai. And one is put away for tzadikim l'asid l'avai. And the Maral, I believe, says that there are three groups of Goyim. There are the Goyim that serve Avodah Zarah, the Goyim that don't serve Avodah Zarah and don't do Zayah Mitzvahs, and the Goyim that keep Zayah Mitzvahs. And the wealth came in from these three groups of Goyim, and this is the Maral, and Yosef separated them into three groups. He put the money from the Ayv Avodah Zarah in one place. He put the money from the non-Oyv, the Avodah Zarah, the people that don't keep Sheva Mitzvahs, in the second place. And he put the money of the people that keep Sheva Mitzvahs in a third place. The treasure of the Oyv, the Avodah Zarah, Kairach found. And that's what led to his downfall. He got swallowed into the ground. He says, the Gemara says that Avodah Zarah is buried. You bury Avodah Zarah. So all the money of the Avodah Zarah ended up being buried along with Kairach, and the money misled him on the way. Not that it was Asabana, it wasn't Avodah Zarah money per se, came from the Avodah Zarah, quote unquote, was tainted, and therefore when Kairach did something wrong, it ended up underground. The money of the non of the Avodah Zarah and the non-keepers of the Sheva Mitzvahs ended up by Rome. Rome ended up with that treasure that wasn't tainted to bad, wasn't tainted to good, had nothing with it, and that ended up in Rome, which became the world power. And the third one, the ones that keep the Sheva Mitzvahs, money comes with a good vibe, so to speak. These are earned by people who did what they were supposed to, and that's the Nuzul of Tzadikim Lassad Lavoi. So the Maral says, yes. No, it doesn't say that. It says that, well, it was by design of the Rabban Shlalom, but not by design of, meaning he stumbled across it by divine design.
All of these were destined to be found by people.
Exactly, right. Kairach was supposed to be rich for whatever reason, and the way he got his riches was by finding that. And Rome is supposed to be very powerful and rich, and they found this hidden treasure that filled up their coffers, or at least filled up one emperor's coffers. And the third one is kept for the Tzadikim Lassad Lavoi, for them to have to be rich in their way, whatever that means.
That's what I was going to question. That's not material wealth.
It is material wealth. See, I think that we have a problem. I think that we have a problem, and it's a problem that I think starts from a good point, but ends up being a problem. And that is, see, we treat wealth. We have a problem dealing with wealth because we're constantly taught that money, Adam has that indulgence is wrong, and it is. Indulgence is very wrong. But yet, in many Gemaras, it seems that being wealthy is a big mila, is a big attribute. Nevi'im had to be wealthy. A Kohen Gadol had to be wealthy. Wealth was a part of what made a person into a powerful person who could spread his word, who could do his thing. It's part of Shlemus. When we talk about a complete person, part of the person that we talk about complete is his money. It's in this week's Parsha. Vayava Yaakov Sholem Ir Shechem. Yaakov came complete. He came home from Esav. And Rashi says, complete in three ways. Shalom b'gufay, he was healthy. Shalom b'mavaynay, he had all his money back. Shalom b'tarasay, he had all his taira. He puts taira third. I'm not saying it's the least. But I'm trying to point out, if you want to say the complete person, being wealthy is a part of a shleimus of a person. And therefore, we have the problem, because if we don't want to teach that wealth is great, because that's pushing quote unquote indulgence, which is wrong. But wealth used correctly is an unbelievable attribute. It's a mila. So when we say they will have they will find this treasure, it means physical wealth. They will be rich, and therefore that'll be part of their shlemus. People will be shalim lasad lavai. They'll be complete. They'll be healthy. They'll be wealthy, and they'll be very learned. Because wealth is not a dirty word. Wealth is an attribute. It's part of the makeup of a person, right? A Yavam inherits, takes over his brother's share. He takes over his brother's wife. He takes over his brother's possessions. It's part of the makeup of a person. A person has three parts to him. He has his body, he has his surroundings, his family, and he has his possessions. That is part of the makeup of a person. And therefore, wealth is an attribute. So we're caught in a little bit of between a rock and a hard place. Because if you start speaking about the milas of wealth, you're pushing people to say, oh, so if such a big mila, I'd like to acquire it. And therefore, it leads to indulgence. Indulgence is wrong. Wealth is not wrong. It can be used in a very proper way. It can be used. A Kohen Gadol had to be rich. A Navi had to be rich. You don't have influence if you don't have wealth. People that don't have wealth or need others, and they lose their influence. It's a fact. If a Kohen Gadol would have to go begging for his next meal, and he wouldn't have parnasa, people would say, they wouldn't listen to him. It's a fact. It's a reality.
We see that like that in all these donors' drones.
Again, if they were wealthy, they would be much more powerful than they are if they're not wealthy. It's a fact. It's a reality. They're not. I agree with you that they're not, but wealth is a position of influence. It's a fact. People listen to wealthy people. It's the reality of the world.
It's
Shleimus to Adam.
Lovo, people are going to know what's really
in the Abraham. I'm
Again, I think we're misunderstanding the word money.
No.
It's not a dirty word. It's part of Shleimus to Adam. It is. It's reality.
It's Tzadik B'Tov, though. It's Tzadik B'Tov.
Right. Yes, Chanan.
Why don't we focus on using all our gifts appropriately rather than saying, money's not important to help.
I'm agreeing with you. I'm not disagreeing with you. Yes. I just said that. Kind God like to be wealthy. So did a Navi.
They don't honor you and I.
No, honoring is not the point of the money. That's using money for a mason. It's a great idea. If the person, again, I'll say it now, honoring is not really honoring. The biggest bizarre you can give it to a person. If you want to embarrass a person, really drag him through the mud, honor him. Because when you honor him, then you go to the person and say, you're putting an ad in? And they say, you mean you're not going to honor him? You're not going to give it to him? It's like the worst. I mean, you really want to embarrass the person, that's what you should do. You should honor him. But that's not the point. The point is, money is part of the complete person. Part of the complete person. That's what it is. It's Shleimus Adam, yes. It's a part of, it's a third part of the person. First part of the person is his body. Second part of his person is his family. And the third part of his person is his money. Right? A Yavam takes over the other person's status in this world. He takes his wife, he takes his possessions. That's replacing his dead brother. That's what Yibum is. Yes.
And this question, how the customer understands Moshe Rabbeinu's question, whether what is all that hard to understand about the term shekel? What do you not understand about? He says the Kutzker, as much of Ben Al-Shal was confused that a spiritual end could be achieved by material.
Okay, I just want to do a few more lines and then we can start Katara. Where are we up to? Where are we up to? He wasn't swallowed up with the rest of his family and all his money, and he wasn't burned with the 250 people. Only the people with Kairach, not Kairach, not Kairach. And he wasn't from the burnt ones. Kairach, it does not mention Kairach. He died by Magefa. Some Sefer says he died by Magefa the next day, because part of his punishment was to see the downfall of his ideas. He watched all his family get swallowed up in the ground, and he watched all his friends, his 250 friends, get burnt up. And he survived to watch it all, and then died the next day. That's how some Sefer learns. The Mashah doesn't learn that way. The Mashah says that Kairach is really a heart not to crack. It's very hard to figure him out. Because on one hand, he caused people to fight against Moshe Rabbeinu in a very bad way. But on the other hand, his kavana, his intention, had a very good part to it. Meaning he wanted to serve Hashem. He saw that Shmuel was going to come out of him. He saw greatness come out of him. He thought that this was the right thing to do. He wasn't doing it because, at least in his conscious mind, was not doing it to hurt Moshe Rabbeinu. In his conscious mind, he thought that this is the right way to serve Hashem. Therefore, the Mashah says he can't be swallowed up like everybody else because his family fought for the sake of fighting. He fought because he thought he was doing the right thing. He can't be burned up because those people who wanted to be Kohanim Gadolim did it because they wanted to be Kohanim Gadolim for their own sake. He wanted to be a Kohen Gadol because he thought that was the right thing to do. So the Mashah says he's in the middle, so he can't be punished like everybody else, but at the same time he caused everything. So he says that's why the next one, the Amar, says that even though Kairach might have been better, so to speak, but he was both. The Kairach Badayu and Kairach is included with them. Let me just finish Rashi. Lemon Abluim, Lemon Asrufim, Elabim, Magefim, Mace. Below Kairach, Reishnun, Hoya, Levat, Kairach, besides Kairach. The Sukhamishim, Messiah, Machtes. The Yatavar and Ishmael Kosai. Minablu and Asufim Hayan Rashi has a practical question. How can he be burnt and swallowed at the same time? The Rashi Shinisuf and the Shmas of the Guf Kayim. His Shema was burned. He died, but his body was still intact. The Yakach and his Galguad Mokim Ablu and his body rolls to the place where they got swallowed up, Vinivla. The Sibba Parish is Vinchas, Atibla Oysim, Vizkairachim Ohem. He learns as Kairach b'magreifa. He puts the word as Kairach with the rest of the pasuk. The Kairach died in a different death. Kairach b'adayu. Those who brought the Kairach. The Kairach b'makrivei haktiris abim. And Kairach was one from those that brought the Kairach. That's why it means Kairach too. Inami v'es. It says chamishim mitzrayim mishin says v'es. The rabbi's Kairach Ivam comes to include Kairach with them. Kairach definitely had a lot of L'Shem Shemayim in it. It was a mistake. It was built on a character trait of jealousy, but in his mind he did it L'Shem Shemayim, yes.
So the people don't get Olam Haba. It's Korach or Eidah's Korach?
Well, it seems Kairach is included.
Even though he did L'Shem Shemayim.
Well, again, where, according to one man, the Amari do get Olam Haba.